Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Quarantine Break podcast. How are you doing? I hope you're keeping well and safe out there. We have reached episode 8, and today it's the brilliant comedian Kiri Pritchard-McLean. I have wanted to get Kiri on the podcast since day one. Apart from being one of the best comics on the circuit, she has been entertaining the nation in digital comedy club The COVID Arms, raising thousands for charity and making sure that comedians get paid. I laugh so much during this episode. Take a listen, and I'll be back at the end. Hello, Kiri. How have you been keeping?
I have been up and down, but largely okay. I'm very lucky. My family are in good health. Everyone's safe. So yeah, ultimately, everything's okay.
That's great. So we are recording this on a Saturday, which tends to be when my upstairs neighbour's kids go from homeschool screaming to weekend screaming. It's a completely different pitch. So do listen out for that throughout the show.
I'm really excited because I am on the verge of getting broody, but this might just nip it in the bud. So thanks in advance for that.
I have to say, quarantine has almost sent me the opposite way. I've seen all the homeschooling, all the parents looking really stressed. And it almost feels like a challenge now. Instead of, as a kid, looking after a bag of flour for a week, you should have to look after that bag of flour for 12 weeks and not go out.
You should have to homeschool the bag of flour and then you can decide whether you want to have a kid or not. Yeah.
So one of the things we will chat about today is the COVID Arms Comedy Club, of course. But it's Saturday, so show day. Do you still get pre-show nerves for this kind of comedy night?
Yes, when I first started doing it, it was like I was a brand new comic and that the whole day would be ruined and I'd just be thinking about it and panicking about it. But now it's like any other gig, really, in that maybe about half an hour before, I'll start to get really nervous and panic and worry that I don't know what I'm doing and I don't know what I'm going to say. And like, this is a gig that has a countdown clock that you're literally staring at, waiting for your own face to appear in. So that's an added layer of sort of jeopardy, watching the time sort of like run through the hourglass in front of you. But now it's definitely on an even keel. I still get nervous, I still get excited, but not anywhere near the incredibly stressful degree I was getting to start with when I was doing the gig.
I'm so impressed that you can do something like this hours before a show. I would be silently weeping in the corner reading my notes, but silently weeping is a bit of a personal brand, so I would be doing that anyway, I think.
I'm sure there's a lot of people who pay a lot of money to silently weep on a webcam somewhere, so you know, diversify or die, mate. This is your time to shine.
Finally. So I'd like to start the show with a tough question. I'm like Emily Matus in The MPs Tend to Block Me on Twitter. So here it comes, Kiri. How do you take your tea?
I don't drink tea.
Oh, my goodness.
Or coffee.
Really? Wow.
I'm one of those. Yeah.
No hot drinks.
No. Well, I forced myself to drink green tea because you go into like meetings and people are like, can I get you a tea or coffee? And you're like, oh, no, I'm fine. And that's just not good enough for most people. They're like, let me get you something. So I was like, green tea? Because it just sounded like quite a grown-up answer. And it's absolutely disgusting. So I don't ever drink it out of choice. But if I am harassed into having a hot drink, I'll say green tea. But no, coffee, I think, is disgusting. It makes me. I tried it again about a year ago just to check in. I stamped on the floor. I found it so aggressive as a taste. It was absolutely disgusting. I think tea is just crap. It's just like this mad sort of like dishwater with milk in that you guys have all got really into. I just don't understand it at all. So like, I've got loads of vices. I don't need caffeine to be another one on the list.
I'm with you on coffee. I think that sort of started as a child when you get a box of roses and then you accidentally eat the coffee sweet, which is probably one of the worst things that can happen to anyone.
Yeah, definitely. As a child, that is, I think we all have, you know, like we remember we were when Diana died, but also the first time you had a coffee cream. It's exactly the same kind of flashbulb memory. Yeah, it's hideous. And also that's what I think about coffee is like, it's so much about the appearance, because no one has a coffee and goes, first time, this is delicious, which means you had to persevere drinking that thing that you found disgusting, which means that it shows that you're a weaker character. That's what I think about coffee.
It's like when Mad Men first came out and you had a certain kind of man who desperately trying to wean themselves onto whiskey.
Yeah, even though it tastes like something you'd put in a wound to clean it, but forcing it down. Absolutely. Anything like that, any sort of like affectation, even smoking. No one enjoys smoking when you first do it. So if you see a smoker, you're like, you persevered with trying to be cool for a long enough time that you are addicted to it.
I also don't drink coffee, but I have weaned myself onto the sort of dessert style coffees. So things like tiramisu, I quite like.
Okay.
There's a Vietnamese coffee, which is basically just condensed cream and a bit of coffee, which is what's not to love. And actually, there's a thing called an affogato, which is where you pour espresso over ice cream.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that. And it's meant to be amazing, isn't it? And everyone's drinking espresso martinis now. But like, generally, I think there's enough flavors in the world for me to be cracking on with without delving into coffee either. That's sort of how I feel about it.
So even though we're not having a hot drink today, this is a podcast that takes a tea break from the world. It's a world where an article on the BBC website today asked, can I host a barbecue? I don't remember that bit from the movie Pandemic. Like, grilling meat never seemed to be a priority for them.
That's if you watch the director's cut of Outbreak, there's just whole scenes dedicated to whether or not they can have a barbecue, bearing in mind that monkey's still running around.
That might be the Snyder cut of the Justice League, where it's just Batman and Superman standing 2 meters apart. I've not seen it yet, so maybe it is.
It's interesting, isn't it, the barbecue thing. I think they should just say no to barbecues, because also we all know that barbecues are where dads give people food poisoning. So like, the NHS is doing its best already. We don't need a spate of everyone having the shits because someone's got sort of overconfident with some chicken breasts. So I think just call off barbecues altogether.
Well, like you said, with cigarettes and chocolate, no one has ever really gone to a barbecue and thought, this is the best burger I've ever had.
That's the best way to cook that meat. Yeah. It's the ritual of it, definitely. It's the being outside and poking something with a stick and there being fire appeals to a lot of everyone's sort of primal instincts. But ultimately, it gets the coals don't get hot before the temperature drops outside. Like, that's impossible to predict. And everyone just gets hammered. They drink those stubbies that they think are invisible lemonade, and everyone's just like drunk cooking with fire outside. It's terrible. It's so terrible.
We do seem to be in this strange never zone at the moment where everyone's trying to rush the world back to what it was, no matter what the science says. It's a bit like when you buy a fitness DVD in January. Like, it doesn't really matter what Scarlett Moffat yells. We're not really ready for that.
No, it's a strange thing, isn't it? And I'm in Wales, so we have a slightly different set of rules. But it's just really difficult, isn't it? Because you hope that the powers that be are being responsible, but it doesn't feel like that. And also, like, weaponizing swathes of people are like, come on now, we just need to get back to work. And again, a lot of people who, like, work in the trades are like, I've got no income coming in. I haven't either. And
yeah.
If you're a spark or a plumber or your job will come back before mine will. Mine won't be back before the end of the year. And I just think that we can take it on the chin for a bit longer to just make sure that fewer people die. I think it's just an absolutely mad thing. And people are like, what? Like, so we just got to wait till no one's dying before we go back to work. Like, no, because we're not trying to cure death. We're just trying to not have more people die recklessly. It's such a strange thing to convince people that it's not a good thing that people are dying. It's done very strange things to people's brains. And of course, like, we all want normality because that's reassuring. And the weird thing is that now being at home and all the time and trying to work from home and then not working very much has become normal.
Yeah.
And you worry, am I ever going to be able to get back to it? Basically, I think I'm just going to live off the land. That's where I am now. I'm just going to try and fully good life my way out of this situation.
Which is how everyone should get out of any situation, really.
Yeah, a couple of pigs, few potato plants. I think that most problems could have been solved with that. Brexit could have been, I mean, everyone, when Brexit was going on, they're all like, well, if there's food shortages, we'll just dig for Britain. They're all obsessed. We did it in the war. They're all obsessed with digging then. So I say, bring it all back. Let them have their allotments.
I did see on Twitter that you said you have started gardening, but that your first attempt, you sliced open an arse cheek.
Yes, because I'm lucky that there's not many people around here. I don't really have neighbours. So I basically, as soon as it's hot weather, I'm walking around in my kecks and not much else. So I'm just like gardening in my brown knickers, basically. And as I was digging, I found a bit of broken glass. I stuffed it in the wall out of the way. And then I stood up next to the wall. But as I did it, I sort of like, are you familiar with the phrase to slut drop, where someone sort of like crouches down to their heels with their bum and then sort of usually drags their ass up against someone? I sort of slut drop my own garden wall and have a massive, massive cut in my ass to the point where my partner was like, you're going to have to get stitches in this, but it's fine. I don't really believe in stitches. I sound like an anti-vaxxer now, but I just think those things will be fine if you leave them to it. So it is healing, but I can definitely, if I have a hot bath, I'm very aware that sort of one of my arse cheeks is hanging open. Oh god, this is the unsexiest lockdown in the world.
And has slut dropping walls, has that been like a raft of hyper productivity? Have you been baking banana bread? Have you been learning French?
No, not at all. This is just because I'm on a farm, there's always stuff that needs doing. So if the mood ever takes me to achieve anything, there's plenty just outside the door to go and do stuff. So this was actually just around my potato plants. The nettles had gone wild and I was like, I'm just going to have to deal with this. So I just rattled through it in an afternoon. But if I had my time again, I probably wouldn't do it and I would still have an intact ass. But hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
It's interesting as well about this sort of hyper-productivity now. There's almost a bit of a backlash to it. Like, I think it's almost being called toxic productivity, that I think we're all getting to the stage where we're starting to embrace our inner, I need a duvet day, so fuck off.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting, isn't it? The idea that we're only worthy if we're making and producing stuff. And that's something like, sorry to get boring, but like at the beginning of this year, I realized that I was someone who, I'm definitely a workaholic because I have a job I love that is easy to not switch off from. But I realized I was like fetishizing not sleeping enough, working, not having days off. And that is really unhelpful. Like, it's a stupid thing to do. And it's a stupid narrative to perpetuate. So going into this, I definitely kept quiet and wasn't one of those people who's like, I'm going to finally write that book. And, you know, I'm going to get my sitcom commissioned. Because also, all you can do is fail. And there's not always the people the other side in the office to actually deal with said sitcom or said book. So I think I haven't had any ideas for stand-up. I find this whole thing, like, basically when I'm stressed, I don't have any funny ideas because it's like my brain has to be like relaxed. I haven't had any ideas for stand-up and I was beating myself up about it at first, but I'm like, it's fine. Like I'm constantly worrying if my parents are going to get sick. It's all right if I can't make a funny joke out of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think that, like, you do you at the end of the day. Like, you know, I know it's such a lame thing, but like, if this is bringing out the best in you, absolutely amazing. Enjoy your mania. And probably when you read it all back, it'll be dog shit anyway. But also, if you can't do anything or feel creative, that's absolutely fine. Give yourself a break. Yeah. Like, it's enough to just not be falling apart. I've just seen generally, have you noticed this on social media? People just unraveling a little bit. Like,
yeah,
just, you know, like, it's definitely taking its strain mental health-wise, even if it's not as obvious as, you know, painting all your walls black and, you know, running out the door or whatever. Not to be flippant about mental health, but although I have been. I definitely see it manifesting in people kind of struggling with how they're, and especially because we're only really communicating significantly through social media, which is obviously a poison. I think it's, people are really like losing track of themselves. I'm trying to not get off social media, but like limit my time because it's just not good. But yeah, it means I'm reading a lot. I am reading a lot.
That's interesting because I think I've said it on almost every podcast. I just don't seem to have the headspace for reading at the moment. I mean, I used to read so much pre-lockdown, but now my mind starts to wander when I'm reading the instructions on the pizza box.
How much is on your pizza box? What an involved tome is on the Domino's box.
I mean, I do switch off when it gets to the point where it says how long I'm supposed to put it in the oven for. I mean, that's probably why I burn so many pizzas.
You want to have a barbecue, mate? Much safer. Well, it's weird. I love reading, but I don't read when I'm working. To me, it seems it's really stupid. I've kind of convinced myself that it's not a waste of time, an indulgence that I don't have time to do. So now, like when I'm on holiday, I'll read like at least a book a day, and I'm doing the same in lockdown as well, because I'm like, well, at least I'm feeding my brain, and knowledge will come out somewhere at some point. But yeah, I can totally see how you can't, I can't deal with fiction. I find that's, I can't generally, but especially at the moment, I'm like, oh, fuck off with your made up bullshit. Like, I can't really follow it. But if it's like if it's harrowing, I'm there for it. And not those ones that are like A Child Called It or whatever, where it's like absolute sort of like travesty porn that women who wear white linen trousers on holiday really love. It's not that. It's stuff about like I just finished one about Auschwitz. I'm reading one about the two journalists who uncovered Harvey Weinstein. So it's all like really heavy stuff. But that feels like a bit of a break from looking at the news at the moment as well.
I mean, there has been so many negatives in lockdown, and obviously one of them is seen regularly driving up the M1 to local castles. But have you found any positives from this time? I guess, as you say, this sort of learning a bit more of a balance in terms of work, have you found that?
Yeah, although having said that, I don't know if because everything was penciled in my diary to start again in autumn, and if everything went ahead, I wouldn't have a day off for the first 2.5 months. So all that happens is, especially if you're a workaholic, if you're not doing it now, you still give yourself the same amount of work, just in less time. So I definitely feel more emboldened now as a comic who doesn't live in London to go, no, I don't need to come down for a meeting. We'll have a Zoom about it. We'll have a Skype about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you just feel like you have to get on that train and spend that £100 to go down there and be there in person. But I think a great thing to come out of this is that we've realised the world can be a bit smaller and a bit more accessible in relation to geography and accessibility. So that has been good for me. I think it'll mean I spend less time, and I hope it means I spend less time in London. Because someone who doesn't live there, I spend far too much time there, and it's not good for me as a little country mouse. that's helped me. And also, I guess because the show I was like 4 dates into touring was about empathy, and especially in relation to the internet as well, and me trying to be more empathetic online. But I guess all this has shown me how something like this can shake everyone, and everyone, they either split into people who are just altruistic and want to help, or people who are incredibly self-centered, kind of bring everything back to themselves or only see themselves in their sort of sphere. And I don't know how to unite those two things, because I think that would help a lot of things if there was a bit more middle ground and a bit more empathy. But I don't know how, if people struggle to give a shit about anyone else other than their friends and family, I don't know how you ever convince them to do that. Kill them all, I guess. The most empathetic thing I've ever said.
You've been supporting loads of small businesses on Twitter, which I think has been one of the biggest positives in lockdown, that I'm loving my local high street more, mainly to avoid those kind of big businesses, big supermarkets. Like, I basically transfer my entire wages into Etsy at the moment.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I worry about my little postie. He's the person I give, like, try and give him beer and wine and things like that because he's working so hard. And he was saying that on the bank holiday that's just been, he said normally tracked parcels you get about 3,000 before the weekend before Christmas.
Yeah.
Said it was 4,500 on Monday.
Wow.
And he says Christmas they cancel time off, whereas this is not Christmas, so they haven't cancelled time off.
Yeah.
And there's people falling ill all the time, so they're under like massive strain. So I'm always trying to bargain with myself about online shopping and you know, post office and all that kind of stuff. But yes, I'm absolutely here for it. Small businesses, I found as well, have done like so much, like personally donating. When these people are on incredibly tight margins as it is, most of small businesses are, or the ones that I've been looking at anyway, are families. So they've got to home educate their kids as well. And they're still finding time to give 10, 15% of their profits away, or doing stuff just where all the profit goes to NHS charities. I think it's absolutely amazing. And it sort of puts to shame any big organization with shareholders or whatever that isn't doing their bit. It's really disgusting. I've been trying to shout about those people. It's also quite a nice thing as well, to sort of sit there and in the morning and go through little bits and find stuff on Instagram and be like, oh, yeah, they look like good eggs doing a good thing. And it sort of makes you think, it reassures you that there's lots of people out there who believe in each other, I guess.
I think as you say, I also have my good days and bad days. I think on my worst days, it's those businesses that I genuinely feel anxious about. Like I look at local businesses near me and I get genuinely scared that they might not reopen or that they're struggling. Basically, I've got a hell of a lot of vouchers now that at some point in the year, like, I'm going to have the biggest shopping spree. I'll go for a pedicure, get my hair cut. I'm going to look amazing.
I can't wait to see your glow up when all this opens again. It's gonna be amazing. I did that as well. I did it for my my hairdresser is probably the only business, like small business, that I go to constantly that isn't a Chinese takeaway near me. They were someone I got a voucher for, and it is that thing of, I just worry. I know the two women who run it, and they are just like a small limited company as well, who are to get themselves going and put themselves on tiny wage. They're not doing that dodgy thing that comedians do where they put make themselves a limited company so they don't have to pay tax. But like, it's like these are people who are really at risk, and I just I'm not really smart enough, and avoiding the news as much as I can to see whether there's any meaningful help being given to them. But it's just you just hope that it's like they just got to stay the course. But I just worry that because there's nothing's being efficiently dealt with, we don't know how long that is. Because if they said to everyone now, right, December, everything will be back to normal, but we just have to do this for then. Having a clear timeline is so much better mentally. Like, all go, right, okay, well, we definitely can't do that. What are we going to do to make money in the meantime? But just this thing of like, every week hopefully we'll find out something is really it's really stressful.
And lockdown has affected so many industries, and as you said, comedy and theatre, those industries closed overnight. And actually, I had James Graham on the podcast last week, and as he said, you guys pretty much closed before the government asked you to close. When that happened, that must have been a really scary time.
Yes, and I think maybe, even though I had, because I write on topical shows, I had been following this since it originally broke out in, like, what was it, December? When it was making mainstream news anyway. So you could see it happening in slow motion elsewhere. But I guess there's an, like, I don't know, maybe it's me or like colonial arrogance of being like, it'll be different over here. We'll be absolutely fine. So I guess I didn't really take it seriously or thought maybe it would last for 2 weeks and then, you know, some people would get ill and then it would be fine and everyone would recover. And, you know, to have that whipped away from you is hugely difficult and stressful financially. you worry about everywhere you have an association with. So, you know, even if my tour comes back, a half the venue is going to be open. All those lovely people who run it and work so hard. No, very rarely are people in the arts well paid. So that woman who also does this and that and then cleans for 2 days a week for them, how the fuck is she coping? Because it's not like, you know, she's not on dividends and paid loads. And it's the idea as well that potentially it means the arts again is only going to be inhabited by people who could afford to not make any money from it anyway, which would be a problem facing everyone. And then it's the added thing of, I sort of feel acutely, people have very sweetly, they've been like, God, I can't wait to see what you have to say on this when you come see it live. And it's like, oh God, is there going to be a pressure to examine this and talk about it? And you can't ignore it, but like, I don't know how much I want to dwell on it. And, you know, that being kind of held to account to dissect and commentate on everything that's happening is quite a daunting prospect as well. Yeah. It's just a really strange, strange world. And I worry for, because I'm not a comic who makes money because of the fringe. Like, I came up through the circuit. That's how I paid my bills. And the circuit is brilliant in Britain. Like, there's nowhere else like it. So, because we're such a small island, it's incredible. Like, Bruce for the most amazing talent. And that is going to be hardest hit because those small pubs and clubs, half of those probably won't be able to open again. And those comedians who are like, you're doing okay, but you're definitely living like not hand to mouth, but you know, you are waiting 28 days for backs or whatever. When all that drops away, there's no cancellation policies, there's no furloughing. Some of them slip through the gaps of the other funding. It's just putting lots of our comedians in a really stressful situation that I worry about.
And as you say, and then you're putting people in that stressful situation and then be funny clown, entertain me.
Yeah exactly. And be like, come on, it's your job to cheer us all up. And you're like, but I'm really sad and I'm gonna lose my home. But yeah, it's so hard. It's so hard. I just don't know what to do about it. And you feel impotent to it all as well, as in like, I'm in a really fortunate position in that I saved some money and I'm lucky because I have got some telly and radio work, which pays more. So, you've got a bit held back. But if you're not doing that stuff, which is 90% of the circuit, if not more, then what, like, you're kind of on your own. And it's, I can't imagine the strain mental health wise, because also I hadn't realized prior to this how much of my self-esteem was intrinsically linked to my work. So going out on stage and like making people laugh is what made me feel good about myself. And to have that snatched away very selfishly, I'm like, oh God, I really struggle with my self-esteem. And like, and also because like stand-up was giving me like a purpose, and I had this tour and I wanted to talk about this thing. I was doing it for 10 years, gigging 5 times a week for 10 years. And then it's gone. And then you're like, I don't know what I am. I think I'm just someone who likes dry roasted peanuts and has nothing to say about the world anymore. That's how I've decided I am.
It's when you see those kind of articles, you know, can I host a barbecue? And as you say, you know, you've got friends who are out of work, people genuinely struggling sort of week to week in terms of finance, and people are trying their hardest to grill some meat. it just feels quite ridiculous.
That's true. Yeah, it does feel flippant. It feels like we're... feels like the focus is on the wrong thing, but maybe it's, I don't know what it is. There's been some good to come out of it. They've organized this live comedy association, so has mobilized, and it's basically trying to bring together all the elements of comedy. So you know, producers, directors, comedians, and unify the voice to sort of lobby for representation and protection. And I've been really impressed with everything they're doing so far. And we've never had anything in place like that before. And anything that's sort of tried has been like, oh, well, you'll never get comedians to kind of band together, because it's just an industry of individuals. And I'm really hoping that the silver lining to this horrible shit cloud is that the comedy industry becomes more united with specific goals for strengthening our industry and making it a safer, better working environment. Would be a nice thing to come out of it.
I I must say, another nice thing to come out of this has been the COVID Arms, and that's the weekly virtual comedy night that you host to support the Trussell Trust and comedians as well. Can you tell us a little bit about how that got started?
Yes. So I went to school with Jess and Jake Lee Wilson, primary school. And then I sort of met Jess years later at a gig, and we just chatted a bit, basically, because she's moved back to Anglesey and this is where my family is. And then she said, listen, my brother and I have been running this like a virtual pub for our mates where we just sit on Zoom basically and have a drink. We thought about getting some entertainment on. Would you fancy doing comedy? And obviously I thought, no, that sounds like the worst thing in the world, but I'm very bad at saying no to people I like, and Jess is one of those people. So I was like, yeah, fine. I was like, let me see if I she said, I thought maybe we could sell tickets and raise a bit of money for charity. And I was like, okay, let me see if I can rope in someone else. So they already had Rosie Jones doing it, and I asked Stephen Bailey and I asked Rachel Fairburn. So we did that first one to raise money for the Trussell Trust, and it raised like 13 grand or something. So we thought it would raise a little bit of money, and I think we thought maybe 30 out of push 100 people would come, and there was thousands. So we were like, oh, okay. And we kind of found that it, because online gigs, there's so much that you can't replicate from the live experience. But we were like, oh, we think we have the ingredients for this to work. So we sort of, every week we were like, let's just try another one. And I said, and Jess and Jake were amazing and on the same page of this. I was like, I don't want to be another person asking comedians to work for free. So if we can split, give half the money to the Trussell Trust straight away, split the rest between the acts, and then they can decide, they could donate it to Trussell Trust, they could donate it to the other acts, they could keep it, and there's no shame and no one gets told either way. Like, it's all, I'm not here to judge anyone on their financial situation. Yeah. So we decided to do that, and that's how it works from then on. And yeah, I think we accidentally got a lot of things right early doors with chatting to the audience. So it feels more like a real gig in a community, and encouraging it to feel like a community. And then the amazing Beaver Town Beer heard about us and were like, let's give you some free beer to give to people. And we're like, yeah, please. So we get to send to the acts as well, which is a really nice thing to just have a box of beer turn up at your house. Is obviously lovely. Yeah, so and it's just been growing and growing, and it's basically sort of like plateaued now. So we get about 3,000 people watch the show every week. Wow. And we've got amazing names on it. It's really nice, and I know, I feel really confident asking, to the point of badgering people to do it, because I know it's a good gig. Like, obviously it was sort of tenuous at the beginning, but I was like, I know this is I'm not asking anyone to do a horrible gig. I will make sure that it's as great as it can be, and that their style works no matter what they do. So yeah, it's really nice. It's also really good for me in my brain to have something to do every week, a reason to wash if nothing else. And being able to give like a big wad of money over to comedians who need it, and also to the Trussell Trust, has been great. Yeah, been really something nice to come out of this.
And there's been so many incredible names that have been on: Russell Howard, Ed Gamble, Ross Noble, Susie Ruffalo, Sarah Pascal, Aisling B, Nish Kumar, Rosie Jones, Tom Allen. I could stop. I'll stop there, because I could just be listing comedians for the rest of this podcast. But you must feel immensely proud when you hear that list of amazing names.
Yes, yeah, I have pulled in lots of favors. Yeah, I do, obviously, really proud. And also for me, it was important as well to try and get a balance of circuit acts who people won't have seen, who I think are incredible, and big names who they'll be tuning in for. And now I think the audience is pretty loyal and would come whoever we put on. But for me, it's really important to show the world I come from, which is the circuit, and how brilliant and how strong how diverse it is. So that's been really nice. And also help people that I know are like, you know, when I know someone's like, say, a guy and his wife's been made redundant as well, and I know they've got three kids, well, I know I can give them a lovely gig in front of a nice audience and chuck them a bit of money. It's like, it's the absolute dream to do comedy, to, because also it's that thing of like, helping a lot of these people are really proud, and so I'm not going, here's some money, I'm going, come and do your job and let me pay you well for it, which is like the perfect scenario. Everyone wants to, you know, for their own self-esteem as well, wants to like pay their way and be paid for their services. So yeah, I'm really, really proud of it and what it's done. And I think it's it's important to the audience as well. There's a lot of people who've contacted me who are shielding, so we'll be there, we're there earlier and we'll be there longer, and have found a real sort of sense of community in the night, which is absolutely lovely. Yeah, it's really nice, and it's a lot of people, a lot of key workers as well have messaged and be like, oh, it's my thing that I do every week that feels like a, yeah, bit of a break away from everything they're dealing with as a result of this horrible virus.
And as you mentioned, the front row is such a great idea, where it does give you that opportunity to interact with the crowd as you would do in a normal comedy gig.
Yeah, it's well, because I compare a lot anyway, and the most interesting thing and the funniest stuff always comes from chatting to people in the audience, because I got no idea what that person's going to say. And I am interested in people, and it's I'm not getting any contact that isn't my brother or my partner or the postman at the moment. So like, to chat to strangers is a really lovely thing that I genuinely like look forward to. And there's such a nice bunch as well. It's sort of self-selecting. The fact that it's for charity and a woman's hosting it means a cunt's keep away straight away. So it means that you're generally only talking to really nice people and just having a bit of a daft laugh with them. And we set them competitions as well, so it's quite cute to have a chat about that stuff, or to get their pictures or their tweets up on the screen at the end. But yeah, just feeling like it's it's all the, to me, it's trying to channel the best parts of any pub that you love, in that there's sort of characters and there's a sense of community, and it feels like you can be as involved or not involved as you like. You can sit in the corner and just watch everyone else, or you can get involved and be the one who's having a chat, and there's room for everyone, I think is a really nice thing.
And we know that the COVID arms work so well now, and I imagine it is an easier sell to comedians because they can see how well it's done. But when you first started and you were asking these guys to do a set on Zoom, what was the reaction like?
No, thank you. And yeah, so basically I had to just start with people that I think are too nice to say no. Which is like Nish Kumar, definitely too nice to say no. Sarah Pascoe, Susie Ruffle, Tom Allen, all too nice to say no. And then once they've done it, and the feeling afterwards, because we're all on like a WhatsApp group together, is like, oh my God, that was great. And they've got this sort of energy and like, oh, that was really fun. And you're like, yeah, I promise it is nice. Because the audience is so interactive as well on Twitter and Instagram. You don't hear the laughs, but you come off and there's this big wave of love, which is exactly what you get from doing stand-up. So after that, it became sort of easier. And again, Russell Howard, just too nice to say no to stuff. So I basically started with them. And then anyone who's, so Tim Key was on last week, I had to really convince him and then send him links to the show and go, listen, I'm not going to put you in a situation, like, you've got to trust me here. Because I run a gig and called Suspiciously Cheap that runs in mainly Manchester and London, and it's a nice gig. I know how to run a good gig, so I'm not approaching anyone who doesn't already know that I wouldn't ask them to do a crap gig. So I'm already approaching people that hopefully would know that I'm not going to be like, come and do this dog shit gig and look like an asshole on the internet forever. So we put as much in it to go, like, it stays up but only for 2 days, you know, because comedians are worried. The ultimate thing is they're worried about dying on their ass and then they're going viral or whatever. So I explained really clearly. So Tim Keel took a lot of convincing. Rod Gilbert, who's on this week, took a lot of convincing, but is up for it. And also it's interesting. It's finding their way to make it work. So Rod's doing something fucking mad tonight and very interactive that only he could do, but also make sure that he's like, I can't just, he said, what am I going to do? Stand up. He said, plonk my laptop on the mantelpiece and just do it at a camera next to the picture of my mum and dad getting married. And I was like, yeah, I can't ask you to do that. That's not going to make you funnier. But this idea is really fun. And then next week, it's exclusive until later tonight, Frankie Boyle's going to be doing it. And I've been checking one. He's like, I've just got to think of the right thing. So he's written this thing. So yeah, it's quite nice that I'm like, if anyone's curious, I'm just persistent with them because I really want them to do it and know that it's a good gig, and then hopefully tell everyone that they know. And then it'll be easy to ask other people. And also being able to go, listen, you don't have to trust me on it. Speak to these people and they can honestly tell you how they found the gig. And everyone said yes.
And it's interesting, as you say, how people have sort of changed their style a little bit to kind of fit the format. But I mean, I suppose, does it feel strange to do stand up on a screen? As you said earlier, you'd never do a gig where you can see your own face, I guess.
Yeah, just looking at your own face as well. It is strange, not just because you're looking into your own cold dead eyes, but because you do rely on the audience for a gauge in terms of pace, tone, like what they like from you. So if you find that when you're being a bit silly or pulling a certain face, they like it, you just do more of that. It's like symbiotic. Whereas if you can't see anything, you're going off instinct, and yeah, that's really tough. And like, how long do you pause? They would normally laugh here in a club, and when can you pick it up again to not trample the laughter? And yeah, and also we all know that watching, there's a reason why Live at the Apollo cuts to people laughing in the audience, because it's a prompt, and that's why that's why they film a lot of things like Mrs. Brown's Boys in front of a live audience, because it's like a laughter track. So you don't have it on a gig in Zoom. And that's not to say that things aren't funny. It's just that sometimes your brain needs a little cajole into going, oh, that was a joke. Yeah, God, of course it is. That's really funny. So you're doing it all without these sort of props and sort of support. So that is very strange. But now I'm just worried, I've got so used to it that I can't go back to gigging normally. I will not know how to talk to people. I'll be like, can you just put a plate of glass in front of your face? I'm feeling very uncomfortable with you being that close.
And we have to talk about the spin-off pub quiz you did, because unlike most spin-offs, it was amazing. So you raised so much money for charity, set a world record. Can you tell us how that happened and what happened?
So we were doing this, just cracking on with the COVID arms, and then Crowdfunder, who we sell our tickets through, got in contact with me. Like, listen, we wanted to do a massive pub quiz, like a virtual pub. Guinness World Records would like us to do an attempt for the biggest, like, people at a virtual pub. And we just thought, why not use you, because you are an existing thing? And well, they wanted to do a comedy night first, and I was like, no, because my reasoning was, if we get loads of publicity behind it, then what will happen is people who aren't necessarily comedy fans will come and watch it, and for all the reasons I've just said, be like, this is shit. And then you've got those people who are negative about everything watching a Zoom gig that they've never seen before, being like, oh, now I think that Keira Pritchard Clay's dog shit, and I'm going to tell the internet. And I couldn't ask comedians in good conscience to put themselves like that, out like that. Also, people feel weird about burning their material. So I was like, I think we should just do a quiz and have everyone host around, and they can do whatever they want with it. And it was so fun. And like, it's such a good way of doing it, because what people had rounds on would have called. So like, Nish Kumar doing The Simpsons, Joel Dommett had a round all about me. I didn't know the answers to some of the questions. and then Rachel Fairbairn had one about serial killers. Stephen Bailey had one about Coronation Street. So it's perfect, because people's personality comes out, and it's like, that's not a pub quiz that you could have prepared for. London Hughes's was all about when she'd last had sex with people. Like, it's not, and then we had Jenny Ryan from the quiz with like proper hardcore questions. So
yeah,
like, if you won that, like, you have got a special brain. Definitely. And it also was a really good way of supporting venues, because what people got to do is, as part of being in the COVID arms, basically buy it forward and buy a pub at their local. So we had comedy clubs that I've come up through, like the Amazing Frog and Bucket in Manchester, were able to get behind it and get involved. And that means that it's just a little chunk of money that will hopefully help a few overheads while they're shut and can't do anything. So yeah, it was amazing to do, and like, sort of exhausting, because just like orchestrating all that stuff of like, the some people had to pre-record because they were doing other things, and getting everyone lined up to come and do it live, and all that kind of stuff was a big undertaking that I would say principally Jake and Jess did, because Jess would be like lining people up, getting ready to go on with their quizzes, and then me just chatting in the middle, and then the Guinness World Records guy coming on, and doing a real sort of Davina McCall pause where we didn't think we got the World Record. But yeah, it was absolutely amazing and a really like fun, exhausting thing to be involved in. I remember after we did it, Jake was like, they can throw anything they want at me technically now. He's like, I can absolutely deal with it. So yeah, it was it's amazing to come out of the lockdown with a world record is a really nice thing.
And I've stolen Joe Wilkinson's questions, I think, for other pub quizzes I've done. It was on Brucey's Price is Right, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the most sexist selection of questions ever. And they're all from like 1997, which didn't feel long enough ago for those questions. They're really bad. They're all like, we asked 100 women, like unmarried women over 25 and under 30, you know, just like everything is dripping in sexism. But yeah, that's classic Joe Wilkinson. I think he just had those questions knocking around anyway.
Finally, we have to talk a little bit about TV, because obviously a lot of people have been turning to television during lockdown. What have you been watching during this time?
Well, I have a nice little ritual going. When I started off, I'd never seen any of the Marvels. So I watched the entire Marvel universe, which I really enjoyed. So that was one thing. And so we got in like this routine of watching it. And so basically my partner and I, we pick a series and we do it that we've been meaning to watch that we haven't got through. So things I have loved, and these are all hashtag basic bitch things, because I know everyone already thinks they're amazing. But love The Crown, about to start series three, which I'm really excited about, because that's the one with the Welsh language in. And then Noughts and Crosses, which I thought was absolutely brilliant, although sadly is like a cruel reflection of what is going on right now across the world, but in particular in America. What else? Oh, and then my little like, and we just started watching Hollywood on Netflix, which looks amazing.
I haven't seen that. What's that like?
It's all my favourite things, really. It's like sexy people and Hollywood and beautiful costumes. Watch the trailer and you'd be... It's like classic Ryan Murphy.
It's Ryan Murphy, isn't it?
Yeah. Also been watching RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm going to go and watch the finale after this. No spoilers, please. And my partner and I watch that every Saturday morning. We've got All Stars starting soon as well. And my little things that I like to watch in the bath. This is not a underground hit, but Sewing Bee, hosted by Joe Lycett, the Great British Sewing Bee, is the most delightful, gentle television I've ever seen in my life. So I basically, once a week, I have like a nice bath with a bath bomb and do loads of, you know, put loads of face masks on, and I will have it propped up on the toilet where Joe Lycett belongs, watching it. And yeah, it's just so charming and nice to watch. I absolutely love it. And also Glow Up has just started again, which is like Next Top Model, but for makeup artists. It's really cool. And that's great. So we watch that every... There's actually loads of great telly on at the moment.
There is. There's so much great TV on at the moment. And Stacey Dooley's great on Glow Up as well. Like, you watch her in these really gritty documentaries, and now she's chatting to people about makeup, and she can do everything, really.
I think she's rubbish. It's because I think I really want the job. So my partner's like, leave her alone. So when I watch her, like, she just is not warm enough when she's talking to that guy. Like, she's like, how did she speak to him? And he's like, would you just back off Stacey Dooley, because you obviously want her job. But yeah, no, she's great. And she always looks really cool. But yeah, I just think that I would be better at her job. It's that transparent. She's brilliant. I'm just fucking jealous.
I really hope that the casting for the next series have listened to the end of this podcast, because that's a great advert for you to take over. Sorry, Stacey.
Yeah, I will publicly slag off what other people do as a job if I want their job, just so you know. That's the kind of petty person I am.
Kiri, thank you so much for talking to me this lunchtime. I really enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you for chatting to me. I really appreciate it.
Wasn't Kiri amazing? I think everything she's done with the COVID Arms is incredible. If you haven't given it a go, please, please do so. I'm not just saying this because Kiri has appeared on the show, but it is honestly the best digital thing I've done in lockdown. The lineups are great, you'll be supporting live comedy, and you'll honestly have a great time. Links for the COVID Arms are now in the bio. Kiri also co-hosts an outstanding podcast called All Killer, No Filler, and it's all about serial killers, which I would highly recommend. I say this every week, but I continue to be blown away by the response to the podcast so far. If you enjoyed an episode, please continue to spread the word. Subscribe and leave us a review. And of course, follow us on socials. Links again are in the bio. I'll be back very, very soon. But in the meantime, please stay indoors.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.